then you get to know your neighbours, and the neighbour directly opposite was between the walls. She and her husband were the first people in the area, and they were on a dirt road. And she kept on telling me this repeated story about every winter there was a winter stream that came through our property. As I said, they were the only place there to begin with, so she could observe this for quite a few years until they actually put in other roads and other people built around. And I sort of nodded my head and sort of think, oh, you know, that's a strange story. But then when I started to put in the vegetable garden, I started to dig up river stones. So suddenly clicked to me, yes, she was right. These could not have got there unless that had been a stream. And then there was a huge big kurrajong tree right beside that. And it always mystified us. And we now say that tree would have been there pre-European times. Wow. Because it would have been a food tree, but both the leaves, all the leaves are like silver beet, which we've cooked with. So it's a food tree. And then the seeds from the kurrajong pod are like pine nuts. So that would have been another source of protein for Aboriginal people. That tree, we treasure it now. Mm. It's like our focus of our backyard is this amazing tree.
Just touching it would be...
Yes, it is. I touch it all the time. Yeah. It's like, it feels almost like electricity comes off it. It's so amazing.
And the green pods, which we have now, they're just so beautiful looking.
Actually, you should have brought a couple in to show you that. They're big and huge and fat this year. This year we hope to really try and get use the pine nut, the seeds out of it for food.
Have made pesto in the past.
Amazing.
Over time, we put in all the fruit trees, and we're always still putting in more productive trees all the time. When something dies, we think about the next one. So it's an ongoing process. But we have got amazing shade now in the backyard, and we've got enough deciduous trees in the right position. Mm. So when winter comes, the sun floods into the house and studio at the back. So we've always working on those design principles, and then when we were actually on these trips overseas, we learned about the oleopots, which is an ancient form of watering. So all our garden, there's no irrigation pipes anywhere. It's all with recycled black 10 or 12 litre pots that are sunk into the ground over summertime, and then they're filled with, plugged with wet newspaper and then compost and then sticks on top of that so the birds don't get in and scratch around. So that there's 90 of those around the garden.
Are they made of clay?
No.
Originally, the ancient ones were.
The ancient ones would have been made of clay. So we've adapted that.
Because we can't store 90 pots in the wintertime on our suburban block.
Yeah,
but you can stack the black plastic pots.
Yes.
So it's, are they just plastic?
Yeah, we just get them off the street. We buy plants and put them out in the street.
Nobody can believe people who now walk around our garden, even after it hasn't rained for months and months, they can't believe the growth. And we've just got a huge apple crop to pick shortly. We've got a huge lake peach crop to pick.
Macadamias, pecans.
You know, it's just amazing. There would not be a day goes past we don't bring a couple of kilos of food in for the kitchen use.
Wow.
It's just amazing what we're still producing. We've got rock melons coming. We've got...
Sapotes?
Sapotes, yeah.
White sapotes.
Yeah.
They're from South America, and they're the sweetest fruit you could ever imagine.
Yeah.
I have to put lime on it because it's too sweet.
Too sweet,
And I just heard from somebody recently that they said, if you want to make homemade ice cream, use your sapotes.
Oh, okay.
It's actually nicknamed the ice cream fruit.
Which I'm just about to experiment with.
That sounds good. The other aspect... We said we filled the yard with fruit and nut trees and flowers and other native... quite a few native sort of herbs and fruit. We had the biggest crop of kwandongs last year that we've ever had, even though it was dry as a bone, and stuff like this. We've got native limes, we've got some small native oranges, but orange plants, which of course are not citrus, the native limes are. Okay, but everything was well organized too. Chris mentioned the deciduous trees, but we've also got on the perimeter trees to cut down, evergreen trees to cut down cold winter winds from the southwest, hot summer winds from the north, that sort of stuff. And as a result, in a way, I got a little bit of funding. We've got 10 sensors for temperature and humidity around the garden, plus a couple in the house and one in a shed that's highly energy efficient. It's very insulated. It's a place where eventually, if we ever need an air conditioner, we'll put it in there.
Okay.
Because it's only a small space. It'll be like a cool retreat. We don't have mechanical air conditioning at the moment, just fans and the garden. And we've got one comparison sensor in an open area in the backyard of one of their neighbors across the street. And we're seeing things like in the middle of summer, on a summer's day, there's up to, in the middle of the day, there's up to 10 degrees difference between in our garden and that open area across the street. And
but 10 degrees.
Between 6 and 10 degrees difference. Right? And we've got the sensor across the street. It is open, but it's not hit directly by the sun on the sensor part. Okay, because we didn't want it totally shaded, because that's a false comparison. Mm-hmm. Because we've got shade, there's open area there. We want to compare the open area versus in the garden itself. Because it's not just shade, there's the evapotranspiration, there's the breeze is going through the vegetation, there's a cooling effect as well. But the interesting thing too is that in the middle of winter at nighttime, it's warmer in the garden than in the open area. So it's actually helping well, think of it this way. If you have sun during the day, right, it gets absorbed in the vegetation, then re-radiates at night.
Okay.
So all you have to do, for instance, is go into the parklands in middle of winter, and if there's an area that's, you know, almost forested, walk out in the open area first, then go into that forest area, and you'll feel warmer.
Mm.
Okay? Because we've experienced that out at a place at Monarto as well. When we go from the open paddock into the bushland, all of a sudden it's a hell of a lot warmer at night time and winter. And so it's actually modulating the temperature over the whole year, that the garden.
Can I ask what the kwandong attaches to? Because it's semi-parasitic.
Oh,
so many things around it.
So
peach tree.
It doesn't need a particular tree.
No.
Peach. It's just to the roots. There's a peach tree beside it. There's a strawberry guava very close by. Yeah. There's an Asian pear tree close by. So it's probably connecting to all sorts of things.
But we don't, you know, the classical thing was kwandong pie, kwandong and apple pie. But we've gone for the savoury, so we've developed our own recipes for savoury.
Okay.
One is that John does in particular is stuff chicken with kwandongs and feta and native.
Native oregano.
Native oregano.
That sounds awesome.
It takes quite a while to do everything properly, but then
so we do it for festive occasions.
For festive birthdays and festive things.
But even simple things, you can just, you know, fry up some halloumi with kwandong. And it's delicious because it's that sort of fruit that's a little bit tart. So it's perfect for savoury things.
It has such a distinctive flavour. But I think it actually gets lost in the kwandong pie. But I will eat it if I've given it.
That's great. Yeah. I think that's a good place to leave.
Yes.
Fabulous.
It's been fabulous. Thank you.